Good morning. This is Maggie Jones, and this is Natural Wonders. This morning I'm going to read from a book by Francis Hammerstrom. There's so much I want to tell you about the Hammerstroms, but to narrow down two amazing lives, just know that Hammy and Fran were both students of Aldo Leopold, as was Ben Logan. Starting their work with him in 1937, Fran was his only woman graduate student, and Hammy was his only PhD student. Their life's work, centered near Plainfield in the Central Sands, involved studying prairie chickens, sharp-tailed grouse, all the raptors, and many more species, learning every detail of their lives and habitat. They lived in a pre-Civil War house with no indoor plumbing, which they never bothered to modernize or paint. They were too busy. They both worked for state agencies that became the Department of Natural Resources. Because Fran worked part-time, while Hammy worked full-time, she spent her free hours conducting research on birds of prey, including harriers, or marsh hawks, great horned owls, golden eagles, bald eagles, kestrels, and the list goes on. Over her harrier grassland study areas, DDT was being sprayed from aircraft over nearby surrounding crops. To pay for her DDT tissue sample reports from a lab in Madison, she would carefully package homemade pies and mail them to trade, as she had no formal funding for her work. Her research in the terrible effects of DDT on her wild raptor study subjects was instrumental in the successful fight to ban DDT. I am forever grateful that she wrote books, 10 books filled with the best stories you've ever heard. I hope to read many of her stories to you. I'm starting with her book for children, Walk When the Moon is Full. I think this book is really for parents, but really it's for all of us. The introduction. This story is about two real children, Alan and Elva, who called their father Hammy and their mother Fran. They lived on a 240-acre farm in Wisconsin and longed to go exploring at night. Elva the younger liked to climb trees. Animals trusted her to come very close, and her keen ears heard the faintest sounds. Alan had a small but sensitive nose that found and remembered smells, just as his mind remembers facts. He liked to find things out. Fran promised the children that she would explore with them 12 times every month when the moon was full for a whole year. Then Alan laughed. The moon is full 13 times a year. Hammy and Alan laughed because Fran didn't even know the moon is full every 28 days. Each time they walked in the moonlight, they found something new. Sometimes they found animals eating, playing, or fighting. Once Hammy took the whole family to the city, and they were surprised at what they found there, too. This book has 13 surprises. How it began. Both children were in their pajamas, for it was supposed to be the quiet time before they went to bed. Alan was looking at a book, but Elva had been standing at the window for a long time, peering into the night. Alan put down his book and went to the window, too. He lingered there watching. At last he turned to his mother and sighed, "Do we have to go to bed early every single night until we are old?" Fran set her mending aside and looked out the window. The moon was rising like a giant apricot, casting long shadows of gnarled oaks on the snow. Their mother was perfectly still for a long time. At last she repeated Alan's words softly, "Every single night until we are old." Then she said, "No," in a faraway tone. Both children looked up at the sound of their mother's voice. Why should children go to bed early every single night until they are old? "I say no." "What do you mean, no?" both children asked. "I mean, no, you don't have to go to bed. The moon is full. Put on your sweaters and snow pants and overshoes. You can pull them right over your pajamas. Find your mittens. I think they're drying by the stove with mine. Just a moment, I'll tell your father we're going for a walk." "A walk? A walk in the moonlight?" the children shouted. And this is the chapter titled March. "I choose. We go to the pond," shouted Alan. Not tonight, Alan. The ice is too thin to hold us, and don't shout so. I choose, and I want to go to the pond. No, Alan. Alan was furious and forgot to be respectful to his mother. He yelled, "The Cory cat with the cobby tail walked straight into the salt blue sea with a spider nesting on the end of its nose. That's you, Alan." For a few moments, it looked as though nobody was going for a walk in the moonlight. Elva sat on the floor with one boot on and the other in her hand, waiting to see what was going to happen next. Hammy stepped out of his study and said, "There were possum tracks in the long fence row today." Nobody said anything more. They just finished pulling on their boots, put on the rest of their clothes, and headed for the long fence row. It was the darkest full moon night of the winter, for much of the snow had melted. Wind roared above them in the treetops, but down near the ground it seemed quiet, almost as though they were in a cave. Elva found a hole in the earth, a hole with frosty edges. "There must be an animal inside. Do you think that's where the possum went?" Fran called Alan, who had the best nose in the family. They all kneeled on the frozen ground and sniffed the hole. Alan raised his head immediately. "I'm surprised you can't tell. There's a fox down there. It smells just like the fox Hammy brought home last winter." Elva spoke softly. "Is it asleep?" "It probably is," Fran continued. "We can't track anything tonight, and we can't even hear anything with all this wind." "I hear something." Elva was looking straight up. Two long icicles hanging from branches were tapping against each other above their heads. Fran reached up and broke off one for each child. Elva sucked hers, bit off its tip, and held it in her mouth. "It's sweet," she mumbled, "sweet on the bottom." Then she climbed quickly, grasping the swaying branches to get another. Alan stood still. Slowly, the tip of his tongue explored the strange taste of the chilled surface. "Why are the icicles sweet?" he asked. Fran thought a moment. "That old maple's branches must have twisted and cracked in the winter storms. Now the sap is leaking out and freezing." "Maple? Can we make maple syrup?" "Yes." Fran struggled out of her big parka, spread it out, and started pitching icicle tips into it. Alan and Elva added more. Shifting icicles caught sparkling surfaces on the moonlit heap. At last it was so heavy that Fran could hardly carry it home. Fran boiled the icicles in a bucket. It took a lot of boiling, but at last everybody had pancakes with real maple syrup. And this is the chapter titled February. "Oh, Alan, I can walk on top of the frozen snow and the moon is full. Call Fran." "Fran, the moon is full. Come." "I'm working, darlings. Let's go tomorrow night." "Oh, please come. It might rain again." Fran got up to look at the thermometer, 10 below. The sparkle of the ice storm frosted the trees, and moonlight struck the barn roof white. "You're right, darlings. I don't think it will rain tomorrow, but tonight is the night to walk. We'll walk on the crust of ice." Alan called, "I can slide on the crust. Let's go to the hill and we can sit down and coast." At the top of the hill, Fran and Alan sat down and started sliding carefully, but Elva threw herself on her stomach and gave a big push. Down, down, down they went, faster and faster. Elva beat them to the bottom of the hill, but suddenly she wailed, "I've lost a mitten!" Fran said, "Wear mine, and I'll go back and look for it. You two stay here and wait." The children could hear her slowly, slowly crunching up the slippery hill, till the sounds became fainter and fainter. Then all was still. They were alone. Moonlight shone on the glare ice crust. The birches, heavy with their load of ice, were bent so low that some whole trees arched over. Their tops drooped down to the ground and were trapped by the crusted snow. "Alan," whispered Elva, "there's an animal." "Shh, I see it too, down under the birch tree top." Just then there was an enormous noise. Fran was sliding down the hill, bringing Elva's mitten. "Oh," said Elva, "you scared it. There was an animal. It came." "Where?" "Under the birch top. It's gone. It ran away." Let's look, said Fran. Under the tops of the bent-over birches lay rabbit droppings like tiny marbles. The rabbits had eaten the twigs at the top of the birch trees. Elva asked, Will the birch trees always stay bent over? No, Fran said, when the ice melts, they'll straighten up again, and no one will know the difference next summer. I will, said Alan. Shall we keep it a secret? I'll ask Hammy what has eaten the tops of the birches. Your father is a woodsman and hard to fool, but let's see what someone from the city says when we tell him rabbits have eaten our treetops. When Grandma came to visit in spring, the children took her straight to the birch trees, and Alan asked, What ate those treetops? Grandma looked up at the ragged tops of the birch trees and said, Well, squirrels, of course. Fooled you, both children shouted. It was rabbits, and we watched them. I want to thank Elva Hammerstrom for giving me permission to read these books. I'm so grateful. And this is Natural Wonders and Maggie Jones. Thank you for listening.